What's up, everybody? Christian James here. Thank you for watching the first episode of the Christian James podcast. This is the second time I've recorded this because the first time I screwed up, so I didn't actually record anything. All right. Well, I recorded it and then I erased the file as I was trying to edit the file. Genius. Let's get to it. UFC 248 on the weekend. Had one of the greatest fights, if not the greatest fight in fighting history, mixed martial arts history, whatever history you want to call it. It was definitely fight of the night. It was definitely fight of the year. It was even fight of the millennium. Greatest fight ever. You have to go through some footage, but off the top of my head, and I saw UFC 1 in like 1993, I cannot remember a better fight. Like Paul Felder versus Dan Hooker, I think that was 2 or 3 weeks ago, unless it was last week. I think it was 2 or 3 weeks ago. It was unbelievable fight. These men just damaged each other for 25 minutes. No belts on the line, just title ranking, or just contender rankings and pride. Felder walked away with the L. Obviously, Hooker got the W, but the fast forward to the fight I was talking about at 248. This fight started, and these women just went at it. Whatever somebody landed, the other one landed twice. Whatever somebody threw, the other one threw twice. Whatever, it was the greatest fight I've ever seen. Usually when I'm at home, I'm somewhat of an MMA couch judge. I'm judging the fight. Takedown attempts, significant strikes, aggression, cage control. I'm in my head going through all these things because that's what fans do. This one, you couldn't even fathom it. You're just watching two savages who happen to be women beat the shit out of each other for 25 minutes. Neither one went to the press conference. Both of them went to the hospital. There was so much chaos. I don't remember if there was a takedown attempt. I think there was, to be honest. I don't really remember. All I can remember from the fight, I got to go back and watch again, was Joanna Jędrzejczyk. Her head was, honest to God, it must have been swollen by a half an inch to a third of an inch. Like, here's what would happen in the exchange. She would throw, and then she would touch her head just to see if it had popped, just to see if it had come out further. She wasn't trying to defend her head. She was just touching it. I think because it, honest to God, it was so stuck out of her head, it created a shadow effect over her eyes. But even if I have that one finger there, that's somewhat of a shadow effect. But she had, and I'm talking about her whole field of vision, her whole scalp, her whole head, and it would just kept swelling down more. So for anybody who's ever seen Star Trek and knows what a Klingon is, that's what it looked like. It looked like about a billion bees stung her in the front of her head, and only this popped up, and it went pretty quick. And then I think that was in the third round. The next two rounds, Zhang Weili, she just kept throwing punch after punch after punch at this giant target on her head. I thought at one point, Joanna, because she kept touching it so much, I'm like, well, hopefully she doesn't, you know, ask to have to be waved off, think that there's something wrong. Granted, if she has to, that's a smart thing to do. But in my head, I'm like, I can't figure out why she's doing. She just keeps touching her head. She's probably mystified her head is so damn big. Fight goes to the judge's scorecard. I'm pretty sure it's a split decision. I could have went either way. I would have gave it to either girl. In my opinion, I think it possibly should have been a draw and they got to run it back. But it was the greatest fight I've ever seen. People often talking about women in sports, why women don't get paid as much as men, why women this and women that. Look, these two women here went out and proved that if you want to be paid as much as your counterparts who happen to have dicks, all you got to do is just dominate. Because on to the next fight, Israel Adesanya versus Yoel Romero. This was the fight leading up previous to the last week of this is going to be a knockdown, drag out. Romero's going to chase him around the cage. Izzy's going to be on his back foot trying to finish him. And you expected just a savage fight. Ding, ding, ding. Yoel Romero stands there like this for 2 minutes. 2 minutes. Because in his head, he thinks the champion should chase him. Now, Yoel is a former Olympian. So maybe in Yoel's head, like we're both going for the prize, not realizing that Adesanya already had this trap, so we have to meet in the middle and decide who the better man is. I'm just going to stand right here, but give you no indication I want you to meet me here. And just for 2 minutes. That's all he did. So eventually Adesanya comes in. He gets cracked. I'm pretty sure it was an overhand left. He gets cracked in the face. He's like, well, I'm not. He literally touching his face. Like, I'm not doing that again. I'm not going to play your game. So he stays on the outside. Leg kick, leg kick, leg kick. But it's weird. In the end of the leg kick exchange, Romero keeps like lunging forward to hit him. Like he keeps just lunging forward repeatedly over and over and over again just to see what's happening. Just to see if he can make contact and then Izzy circles around and gets away from him because nobody wants to get hit in the face by most people. Nobody wants to get hit in the face with Adesanya. Nobody at all. So we'll circle away from that. And then at the end of the fight, Romero's losing his mind. It's pay-per-view. These people give money for pay-per-view. I don't know what he's screaming about because he didn't do anything for the whole fight. And it's a waste of a title fight. Izzy keeps the strap. There he's gonna move on to fight Paulo Costa, and then that's it. And then Romero, if he gets another shot at the UFC or he gets cut, who knows? But it was just a huge disappointment. So the women definitely should have been main event. But hindsight's always 20/20. You have no way to know how that's gonna end up. The men after that fight, even if their fight was an A or just slightly less than the women's fight, they still would have got booed. These fans, myself at home watching, you have such bloodlust from the fight before. You're so pumped up. Your adrenaline's so high. All your chemicals are so high in your body. You're running hot. And then 2 minutes. I'm not kidding. Like, I'm just over-exaggerating. But it was nothing for 2 minutes. Well, Adesanya's kind of like, well, I don't know. Should I go hit him? Like, what are we doing? And then it would just turned out to be a 25-minute snooze fest. So that was 248. You did have some comebacks. You had Sugar Sean O'Malley came back after 2 years for a marijuana problem. Again, if you don't watch or understand how MMA works, it does not help you fight. But they had some arbitrary rule 12 hours before, 12 hours after. You couldn't test at a certain level. He tested at that level, evidently. It might have been also a supplementation issue, but I don't believe it was. Again, it's been 2 years, and I don't really keep track of people's suspensions that much. Well, he came back and fought the guy he was supposed to fight last time before he got suspended. He dominated. I don't remember the Mexican gentleman's name. He just dominated. He came in there. He looked sharp. The other guy, it went from looking like a black belt to like a blue belt, like in any discipline you want to pick. He was just getting picked apart. He finished the fight. It was a beautiful fight. Other than that, like you had Neil Magny came back again, looked great, had like over a year off. I don't know why he was off for so long. Maybe he was redefining some skills. Maybe he just took some personal time off. But again, it looked great, dominated this fight. Again, the two opponents, I do apologize. I don't remember their names. That was it. The first fight of the night, the show had kicked off a half hour later because I think her name is Megan Levy. Her weight cut did whatever it did to her body. She had to go to the hospital, which is serious. So she unfortunately never got her match in or got her fight in. So that didn't happen. So the show started a half hour late. Other than that, though, it was a pretty good show from a fan's perspective. It was enjoyable, especially Paulo Costa at the end of the Izzy fight, losing his mind, gets kicked out of the arena. And then evidently early in the night, Brian Ortega and the Korean Zombies translator got into a thing, and then I guess Brian Ortega slapped the Korean Zombies translator, which unfortunately that could be an assault charge because I doubt a UFC fighter is going to charge you with assault for slapping him in the mouth, but you just hit a person who has no business getting hit in the mouth. Now, if the translator is lipping off or translating for the Korean Zombie and Brian Ortega thinks it's coming from him, that still doesn't give him the right crack in the mouth, but it makes a little bit more sense. So that happened earlier in the night, so that could be set up for a beautiful feud down the road or the next pay-per-view or who the hell knows what's going to happen there. All right, and then the next night we had WWE Elimination Chamber. You kick off, you got Daniel Bryan versus Drew Gulak. It was a good match, right? Both men are roughly the same size, same type of moveset. The premise of the match was that Bryan had been figured out by Drew Gulak. And how is Drew Gulak going to shut down Brian? Because he knows all his tricks. And it worked pretty well to the end of the match. And then he got caught in a bell lock and he lost. The next match, I don't remember. I don't have a clue what it was. And then you had the Tag Team Elimination Chamber match. It was a good match. Some predictable high spots in the match. I did not expect the team that won to win, which was The Miz and John Morrison. I expected the Usos to win, to be honest, to tie the New Day for seven-time tag team champs. And then finish that feud off at WrestleMania. I was wrong. The match was good. Like I said, there was some high spots. There was nothing spectacular in the match. Otis from Heavy Machinery, he ran right out of the cage by breaking the plexiglass at the end of the cell. So in the Elimination Chamber, there's four cells. It's all surrounded by plexiglass, whatever it is, bulletproof glass, they want to call it. Well, he ran through the cage door, which is what keeps the pod closed, the person in the pod, until they come out. And then he ran right through the cage wall. I'm sure it was planned. It might not have been, but I'm sure it was. It was what about the highlight of the match? There was nothing else really spectacular in the match. The rest of the pay-per-view was good. At the end of the match, we had the Women's Elimination Chamber match. It was okay. Well, let me back up. We had AJ Styles versus Aleister Black. I passed out for part of the match. I took like a 20-minute nap. I don't know what happened. I know The Undertaker came out, and I'm pretty sure he probably chokeslammed AJ, and that'll set him up for WrestleMania. Then we had the female Elimination Chamber match, which started fine and ended up terrible. Shayna Baszler came in. and repeated the same move on four different women. Came in, kicked the girl in the, hit her with some weird flapjack, which is like a power bomb, turned sideways. Kneed her in the chest, which, to be honest, I'm pretty sure that's an Aleister Black type of maneuver, and then just Coquita clutch. I think she just walked behind her and choked her out. He did it to everybody. Then the Italian girl, the Canadian girl, Natalia, just got slammed into the pod with her door repeatedly in the chest. That was okay, I guess, beat her. But all in all, it was lackluster. If she's going to be fighting Becky Lynch at WrestleMania, this match is going to be a bust. They might have to introduce somebody else to the match or very, very quickly find a way to make it entertaining. But Becky Lynch seems to be wearing thin on a lot of people's skin. Shayna Baszler didn't do a hell of a job at all, so we'll see what happens in this case. But other than that, the pay-per-view is just okay. Obviously, UFC and WWE are not the same, but for entertainment value, I was way more entertained with the UFC the night before than I was with WWE on Sunday night. It's not always the case. Obviously, WWE is made for purely entertainment. Nobody's supposed to get hurt. Nobody often gets hurt, seriously hurt. But it was just the night before, just Joanna Jung Jacek versus Zhang Wei Li, excuse me. Those are two hard names to kind of remember. It was great. It more than made the show. WWE the night before, they were mediocre. So that was it. Now, in Canada, for the last few weeks, we've had these native protests in regards to these pipelines. They're going to be putting through some sacred land for the, I can't remember the name of the tribe, excuse me, in British Columbia. So we've had protests all over the country. Canada's a massive country, so they've been all over the country. So we've had them on the highway. We've had them on train tracks, which they shut down the highway. They shut down train tracks. It's definitely caused some disruption to services. I know 1,500 people from the Canadian National Railway have been laid off of work. They may have been reinstated. There may be more, there may be less, but that was the last number I saw. Look, I 100% support what they're doing. I agree that regardless of whatever Trudeau has said, which is our prime minister, whatever has been agreed upon, whatever is whatever, they have no right to go into their sacred land and put down these pipes, regardless of whatever injunction they want to put in, however this has been mandated through the court. I don't believe they have that right. I'm not agreeing with how the protesters are doing it. I think it's completely the wrong way because you're affecting the other citizens. In my opinion, what they should do is fill up buses or a bus full of people, go to Ottawa, go to the Capitol building, and go sit in Trudeau's office and fill up essentially the entire legislation, fill up the assembly, fill up every MPP's office, fill up every MP's office, fill up every secretary's office, and just sit there and protest. You want to get the point across, you're doing it in the wrong manner because you're affecting the wrong people, and the people who might possibly be on your side are not going to be on your side because you're disrupting their life. Now, obviously, your sacred land and lives are being disrupted, but the people that you're affecting are not the ones actually doing the work. So, in my opinion, take your ass to Ottawa, take your ass to your regional MPP's office, and just sit there and protest. Block the hallways, don't use any violent tactics, just sit there. Bang your drums, say your chants, yell, whatever you want to do, have a silent protest. Just sit there. But that's who you're going to impact the most is by going to the problem. The citizens are not going to be able to change this. We have no say over what's happening. We have no say over what could happen or should happen. So I think, honestly, just bothering every other Canadian citizen, and that's the best term I have, is just bothering them. It's not going to get your message across. Obviously, it may annoy other people to contact their local MPP and say it's enough of this because they're disrupting blah, 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 blah. But at the end of the day, I 100,000 million, billion, trillion percent support what they're doing. I just don't support the way they're doing it. But I hope this gets resolved quickly. I hope these people, get what they have coming to them, which is to get their pipes out of the land or off their land. And then we can get on with this because these seem to be the thing that happen in Canada every few years. That we have a native protest over something. I'm not sure what they're all over. They're often over land, to my understanding. And this one I 100% support. So I hope you guys get them off your land. I hope you get to keep your land. And I hope we get a peaceful result to this because we don't need violence over this. There's enough violence in the rest of the world. There's enough violence in society in general. We don't need to be fighting over pipes. Like, we really don't need to be fighting over pipes. Nobody needs to die over this. So hopefully with this resolved in a peaceful manner. But nonetheless, I'm sure the coronavirus has recently taken national news more than anything else, just put people in a state of panic. And it seems to be working quite well. This is just anecdotal. I went to Costco on the weekend, and Costco was out of toilet paper. I've never known Costco to be out of toilet paper. All their Kirkland water was gone. There was a lot of things that were missing. I went on Sunday. Usually it's a madhouse. It's like a packed zoo on like Family Free Day. There was nobody there. The parking lot was full, but it seemed like people were coming as individuals and were simply grabbing either as much as they could or they just weren't have as many people as normal. It could be anecdotal, it could just be because they weren't there, but typically on a Sunday, it is jam-packed because almost everybody has a Sunday off work, so you gotta fill up for the family, you gotta fill up for the week, you gotta do what you gotta do. But typically it's pretty packed on that day. But it seems like a lot of people are really, really being affected by this. But it only seems in countries where we don't have any actual issues, right? There's some countries out there like North Korea, parts of India, parts of South America, a lot of parts of Africa where they have serious issues. They have terrorism issues, they have famine, they have disease, they have things that most of us don't have to contend with in our normal day. Those countries do not seem to be reacting as poorly to this. I have a client of mine who's from India, and I ask him, regularly when I see him, how's the reaction back home to the coronavirus? And the answer is the same. It's not a big deal. They have one person, as far as I know, when he told me, in India that's affected by this. That's one out of 1.3 billion plus people. That's not a bad percentage. So from the perspective, if you take India or the Indian population and do the math, you have a one in 1.3 billion chance of catching the coronavirus. But honest to God, people, look, this is not a new virus. It's not some super bug. This seems to happen every few years. SARS. Okay, I'm going to start when I was a kid. When I was a kid, AIDS was going to kill everybody. AIDS killed Eazy-E. Magic Johnson got AIDS. By the way, it's like 1988 or 1990. Just to update you, it's 2020, and Magic Johnson's still alive and doing just well, doing just fine, and is richer than ever. So it seems every few years this happens, and it seems to people constantly fall for this and keep panicking. Look, the last thing you want to do is stress out your body if your body has to fight off something that's serious. All this panic leads to stress. All this worry leads to stress. All this does is lead to a ton of stress. If you want to be really stressed out, keep doing what you're doing. If you don't want to be really stressed out, take it for what it is. Nobody out there, other than the news, is ramping this up, right? I haven't heard of a whole lot of doctors talking about this. I haven't. The New England Journal of Medicine has not dictated this is more serious than it is. The CDC is not dictating this is more serious than it is. It seems to be just local and national news. Look, the flu kills 500,000 people a year on Earth, right? Like 600 people a year die from coconuts in the head. More people have died from coconuts than have died from the coronavirus. And I'm not trying to turn this into nothing, but it seems in the last few years we've had this push for inclusionism and no racism and no prejudice and no nothing and no this. Then explain to me why all these people who are of Chinese and Asian descent are having their businesses go under, are having very minimal work because people think they th like the coronavirus is in the chicken balls. You think it's in the Like what is happening here? The overall ridiculous reaction to this is absurd. It shows the complete stupidity of most human beings, because people are panicking over nothing. Like, you can't panic over nothing. Does anybody know anybody that's had the coronavirus? No. Does anybody work with somebody that's had it? No. You work with somebody that had the flu? Probably. They have a pretty good chance of killing you with the flu. The flu is pretty deadly in its own right. So in comparison, worry about the one that's there every year, twice a year, three times a year, that kills hundreds of thousands of people on Earth. 60,000 people or something like that die in America from the flu every year. Probably 5 to 10,000 Canadians. I'm just doing anecdotal evidence, but if we take the population and divide it, that seems like a pretty good number. Not that many people have died from the coronavirus. They're canceling events. They canceled the Arnold Sports Classic. 250,000 people are supposed to show up over X amount of days. I'm sure that's great for the town's budget. I'm sure a lot of those people couldn't always get their refund. I'm sure a lot of them have hotels and things, possibly, that could not get refunded flights. So I hope to God all those people got their money back. The band Pearl Jam just canceled their North America tour. A lot of things seem to be happening out of outrage over nothing. Relax. Worry about things that come. Don't worry about anything, to be honest with you. Worrying solves nothing. If you have a problem and you just worry, worry, worry all day long, you're not going to solve it. You need to keep clear-headed. You need to be stress-free or as little stress as possible to deal with your life and deal with the sickness if something does happen. If you're stressed out and you get sick, that's like being twice as sick. You're not going to be able to fight it because you're going to put so much energy towards stress. And stress eats up a lot of energy throughout the body. A lot of people lose a lot of weight if they get really stressed out because they can't eat. And stress, again, it just eats up a lot of calories. So for anybody out there who's panicking over this, don't. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a scientist. I'm telling you right now, if it was as bad as it was, there would be serious problems. There would be lockdowns, there'd be curfews, the immunization, there'd be cotton swabs at your house, there'd be a whole bunch of things that aren't happening. So, relax, take it in stride, and stop watching the news. This seems to be affected by more people who watch the news than anything else. Because at the end of the day, it's not that big of a deal. And if you think it's that big of a deal and you don't agree with me, that's your choice. Buy all the toilet paper, all the water, and all the face masks you want, and do whatever the hell you want. I don't care. All right. So I've been gaining weight, putting on muscle for years. When I started lifting weights, I weighed 170 pounds. I was a lean, mean, not ass-kicking machine, Well, let's get to it, right? When I start lifting weights, one sec. Smoke break. When I started lifting weights years and years and years ago, I was initially fat. I was like 215 pounds. I was fat. Bad relationship. Ate a lot of Popeyes right down the street from 7-Eleven. I was fat. Relationship ends. I'm depressed. I gotta go to the gym because I don't know how else to make myself feel better. So when I did a little bit of Googling, it said how to make yourself less depressed, create endorphins. How to create endorphins? And you move. All right, it seems pretty simple because I'm not one for taking meds. But let's try moving. Okay, so we do the movement. I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm doing bro workouts. I'm doing bench press, biceps, and cardio. That's all I'm doing. All right. So then after that, I end up just getting ready for, after that, I get ready for my first race. My first, what do you call it? Obstacle course race. It's called Run for Your Lives. So people dress up as zombies. You get three life tags. They try to take your life tag. If you die, you die. You can still finish the race. You just die as like a victim and not as a savior or whatever the hell you want to call it. So I'm getting ready for that. I'm running 5K a day. I'm eating lean and mean because my goal is to finish in the top 500 and under 40 minutes. I finished 37:37. I finished literally 450th out of like 12,000 people. That was great. Fast forward a little bit past that, I'm back in the gym. And I was there for I think 14, 15 days in a row. I'm just constantly banging it out, banging it out, banging it out. Right? My old workout partner there is Kareem's there. And he like, okay, you ready? Let's go for it. I think we went for like 155, 165. It was not a ton of weight, but it was more than enough weight. So what ended up happening was, I'm like, okay, you ready? Ready. Down. Bam. I can't get the bar to move. I've been at the gym all day, every day, for months, for weeks. And after this, like, what's the point of coming every day? What's the point of doing all this stuff if it's not working? How am I putting in all this work and I'm not getting bigger and I'm not getting stronger and things aren't working? Oh, I'm not getting bigger and I'm not getting stronger because I'm doing too much. I'm not eating enough and I'm not doing the right type of exercise. So after I got buried by the weight, I went, I bought three Whoppers. From that minute on, it was about size and strength. The race is over. Let's get to it. A few months later, I moved to Toronto. I'm a personal trainer in Toronto. And my days of eating consisted of this. It's the easiest way for me to remember. It's the easiest way for me to explain to you guys out there. I get to work. I'd have a giant bowl. Let's say the bowl is, I don't know, that big. No, bigger than that. Probably twice that size. Right? I would have rice, ground meat, and veggies in there. And I just mix it all up. And then I just scoop, scoop, scoop. Water. Scoop, scoop, scoop. Water. In order for it to help me get it down, the more I ate, the easier it was. And then I just put water in. So I'd have a big breakfast. We go to this place on the road, bacon, eggs, home fries, and a mango salad, maybe something else now, I can't remember. But it was like $4 or $5. It was really cheap. I get that with McDonald's coffee and a muffin. You're looking at well over 1,000 calories for breakfast. Well over. Now, is that the healthiest thing? No. We'll get to that part in a minute. Then later on, I'd have that giant thing of food I said. I'd have two of those, and then I'd have another afternoon snack, which would be a coffee and a muffin. And then after that, I would have another one of those. Somewhere in that, I'd have a protein shake. And then I'd go home. On my way home, there was a pizza there close to my apartment. I'd grab a pepperoni pizza, like $6 with the dipping sauce. I'd eat that. And then if that wasn't enough food, I'd probably have a snack of cheesecake or cereal or something else later in the night. Eating anywhere from like 4,000 to 6,000, 7,000 calories a day. I did this forever. Now, here's my style. This is not science. This is not me really tracking macros at all. I'd eat till I start getting fat and I'd dial it back a little bit. Like it would take me months, 6 months, 8 months, whatever. I'd get a little bit fat. I would dial it back. And then from there, as long as I kept the muscle mass, I would do it again. I did this over years. I was constantly in a pretty much like a 90% bulk, 85% bulk, 15% cutting phase for years. So like I started getting too fat and it's too much negative weight. I would just dial it back a little bit, very, very slowly, keep all that muscle mass as much as I could, and I would proceed to do this. I went from 170 pounds to now I'm up to 244 pounds. It took me a long time. It wasn't easy. Cost a lot of money to eat all that food. I did sacrifice some of my health to eat some of this. There would be some nights. To some of you, this is going to sound great. To you people who can't lose weight, this isn't my fault. I ate 20 chicken McNuggets. Six donuts, like a box of six regular donuts from Tim Hortons, and a medium pepperoni pizza from Pizza Pizza. I'd eat all that in one night. I'd eat all that in one sitting, and then I'd eat more food later. That's not healthy. That's a lot of calories. I do that Friday night, possibly Saturday night, while I'm watching TV and while I'm watching a movie, just so I have the time to focus on the food, smoke weed, and eat more food. If you're trying to put on muscle mass, you have to a certain degree, in my opinion, if you're a person who's prone to being super, super skinny, and I'm not going to get into mesomorph, ectomorph, and endomorph. Look, I don't care. Those are technical terms. That's not what this is about. This is about skinny guys and skinny girls. If you want to put on weight, listen. If you don't, skip it. I don't care. So that was it. And then I did this for years and lifted. I would do less work. I would take escalators, elevators over stairs. I would do less walking. I would put out less energy input. The less I could do to expend energy that wasn't in the gym, the more energy, the more calories I would keep to put on more muscle mass. So I did this for years. I'd only work about compound movements, heavy deadlifts, bench press, squat, overhead press, tire flips. That's compound movement. It's not really considered to be one, but it is. Those are the things I would focus on for years. I wouldn't do bro workouts. I wouldn't do a lot of curls. I wouldn't do a lot of reps of anything. I would do low reps, high weight. Again, focus with that, those extra calories, put on that extra muscle mass, extra size. Then I would sometimes do some bodybuilding training, which is 4 to 8 sets of eight, right? Sometimes I'll go higher, but that would be it. No steroids were involved, folks, so that wasn't my secret. I just ate a lot, 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 and I did it forever. And then I'm still doing it now. I'm almost at my overall goal. I've had goals throughout the years. I always give myself smaller goals. Don't ever plan on going from like 170 to 240. It's a terrible idea. Go from like 170 to 180, 180 to 195, 195 to 210, whatever. Small incremental goals. Don't make them a pound at a time because that works for weight loss. Does not work for weight gain. And just keep adding that size of mass on. Be patient. Realize it's going to take some time. It's going to take some money. It's going to take you a little bit of time to figure out what works for you. Now, as I'm saying, abandon health to do this. I'm not saying to eat like shit the rest of your life because I said this is how you put on muscle mass and then you do this forever. Look, if you have to have a bad meal and you can't eat healthy all the time, that's what you got to do to get your goal. If your goal is worth more than your short-term health, then that's what you got to do. As long as you're going to the gym, you can eat some of this food. If you're just trying to put on size and you're not going to the gym, please do not eat this type of food. Talk to your physician, maybe get a weight gainer shake that's not full of sugars and things of that nature. Eat some more steak, eat some more potatoes, eat some more rice, eat some more things that are substantiating, that keeps you fuller longer, and that'll help. But for anybody else who's trying to get bigger and stronger in the gym, you may have to abandon health a little bit in order to put on that mass. Now, for anybody out there who's trying to lose weight, we'll worry about that in a different podcast. Last thing I'm gonna wrap up with, folks, is why I only do trap bar deadlifts. Why in my videos it's only a trap bar? Why I only have one client currently that does traditional standard barbell deadlifts? It's not worth the risk. It's not. If you're not deadlifting for money, if you're not deadlifting for competition, why do a traditional deadlift? Because it's traditional. It's always been done that way. Look, nobody like as this thing could be used as a bar. Okay, nobody ever tries to essentially pick up anything in front of them other than a deadlift, right? Like you would never try to pick up like anything in front of you like this from the ground up. You pick it up from the side. You pick it up like this. This is how humans are meant to pick things up. So on a trap bar, as you'll see here in this photo, you are actually inside the bar. So you pick it up like luggage. You bend down, keep your arm straight, push your feet, squeeze your butt, bring your chest up. Those are all the cues. So for a safety aspect, it's 1,000 times safer. I have way less little aches and pains, way less little pulls. Same with anybody else I know who uses a trap bar over a traditional deadlift. Now, the other thing is for a coach, it's so much easier to cue. If you're a good coach and you're worried about people's form and technique and injuries and this, that, and the other, you have to be careful because people don't understand this. When it comes to a traditional deadlift, if I let you do something 5% incorrectly at 135, that becomes 8% at 185, 10%. 12% at 225. And it just keeps building the higher up the weight goes. Because if you're off by one thing, as the weight gets heavier, you're not going to get better at it. You're going to get worse. Your issue, your lack of whatever it is, your placement, your positioning, your time of pulling, your ability to drive your knees forward and pop your hips, bring your chest up, your ability to rock back on your hips, to drag the bar up your leg. There's certain things that people think they're doing fine, like, well, that's what you're doing, that's what I'm doing. That's not how this is working. I'm doing what I'm doing, and I'm trying to show you what I'm doing, but you're missing this small thing. And when it comes to a traditional deadlift, it can be detrimental. So for myself, for the safety of my clients, other than the one client I've taught to do it because they're abnormally strong and they want to learn and they go to the gym on their own. Nobody else does it. At the end of the day, if you lift up 250 pounds, 200 pounds, 100 pounds, whatever it is, and you lift it up by staying inside of it or you lift it up by picking it up in front of you, it doesn't make a difference. You've picked it up. That's all that matters. For real life, for not gym strength, whatever you do in the gym should make you stronger outside the gym. It shouldn't make you hurt. It shouldn't give you lower back problems. It shouldn't give you disc problems. It shouldn't give you any of those type of things. It should make you stronger to do your everyday tasks, to pick up your groceries, to pick up your luggage, to pick up your kids, to pick up boxes, right? See how everything's in this plane here? You can even see my arms down here. Everything's the same. You don't pick up shit like this. We don't pick up things like this. This doesn't make any sense. This is just because it's been done this way. It's been done this way. Look, traditions are just neuroses over generations, right? It's tradition to do it this way. What the hell does that even mean? Like, what is a tradition? Something that's really old that people carry forward? Okay, you're allowed to break tradition. You're allowed to change things. So for myself, for the safety of my clients, for my own personal well-being and my preference, all I use is a trap bar. My numbers have went up, my pain has went down, my recovery time has went up. And for my clients, their numbers went up. I had a client, the first time she used a trap bar, put on 30 pounds of more weight on the bar just because it was easier to pick up. She didn't have to worry about the overall load. She didn't have to worry. She wasn't worried about her lower back. She could just pick up the bar. So that's the whole reason I use a trap bar. Look, there was a gentleman, Robert O'Burst, on the Joe Rogan Experience, who was talking about he did a deadlift, like a car deadlift. His legs were numb for 6 to 8 months. He said, don't do it unless you're getting paid for it. A lot of people, you know, want to give him shit. His job is to deadlift. That's how he feeds himself. That's how he feeds his family. He works out for a living, right? People gawk at him because he's huge and muscular. He lifts heavy shit that other people can't lift without a forklift or a party of four. And he's telling you not to do that unless you're going to get paid for it. And people try to shit all over him because I couldn't read the comments. I don't have time for that stupidity. But at the end of the day, if you want to be big and strong, if you want to be strong and safe, do trap bar. If you want to learn traditional, have a good strength base and have somebody good teach you. And if you have nobody to teach you, find a decent YouTube video, videotape yourself, take your time, and be deadly honest about your position, your technique. Because you're like, well, that's okay. It'll get better. It won't get better if it's bad. That's it. Thank you very much for watching the Christian James podcast. Well, that's it. Yep. So if you want, go to christianjames.net, clothing, online training, Christian James on Instagram and Christian James on Facebook. I'm never on Facebook, but I upload my posts to there. Again, more podcasts to follow. We'll get a better name. But again, thank you very much for watching. I'm out.